Welcome to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm your host, James Renford Powell. I'm also the author of the Laws of Material Wealth. And if you have tuned in before, if you've been to the archives, and be sure to go to the archives if you haven't been, go to Blog Talk Radio, BlogTalkRadio.com blogtalkradio.com/Renford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D, and view the you can go back all the way back to week one, week two, week three. There are 54 weeks, and there's 54 weeks of support material. So if you contact me, I'll see that you get set up. 54 weeks of support material, and there are 54 shows. Now, this is in addition to the book, The Laws of Material Wealth, the workbook, which has 5 exercises per chapter, and the 4 DVDs. You can go to YouTube.com. Type in Renford Broadcast Network, R-E-N-F-O-R-D, Broadcast Network. And in the first section is the law, is the first DVD of the Laws of Material Wealth, and you'll have a chance there to get a feel for the DVDs, the workbook, the book, the 54 weeks of support material, and the 54 shows. And I'd love for you to check this out a little bit. I'm stating flatly, there is no more comprehensive personal development program available anywhere. All right. Now, there are other types of programs, but not like this one. So just check it out enough. If you want, I'll send you a free CD that gives you a basic introduction to each of the 13 principles that are covered. In the book, we talk about the 13 universal principles of success, but these are actually universal principles, universal laws, spiritual truths. You have to remember that Jesus said in Matthew 13:35 that he came to reveal the secrets that had lain hidden from the foundation of the earth. And the same passage says, and he spake to them in parables, and without parables spake he not. So you tell me what he was revealing in those parables. He's revealing these universal principles. You will find, if you study them without Sunday school pablum, that each one of those parables explain or illustrate one of these 13 universal principles, or some aspect of one, or some combination of them. So please check that out, and give me a ring if you like, or email me. I am Renford, I-A-M-R-E-N-F-O-R-D. I am Renford at gmail.com. And we'll talk about what you can do to get started, to get some information, to at least have enough information to make some kind of decision yourself about doing something, getting somewhere, understanding what's going on in your world. Three promises I give you. One, these 13 principles, if you utilize this program of study and you identify and verify each of those principles, it will be because you self-identified them. You don't need a guru. You don't have to contemplate your navel in Tibet. And you don't have to have anybody sitting there holding your hand. You don't have to light candles. This is a simple process of you going in and identifying and verifying that principle from your own life experiences. And the second thing is, if you do identify and verify those principles, you'll never be walking down the street wondering what hit you. You will not be sitting in a coffee shop in a befuddled state. If you're in the coffee shop, it's because you're enjoying your coffee and planning your next move. And the third promise is that if you identify and verify these principles, every time you hear someone speak, you listen to an interview like this, you listen to your minister, you read a book, you go to a workshop or anything else, or even just have a private conversation, you will know where the speaker is coming from, the writer is coming from. You'll know whether it is from doctrine, dogma, from school, or whether they're just blowing smoke. And there are plenty of people blowing smoke, all right? So this is something that will be of tremendous benefit to you in your life, and I'm asking you again to check that out. Now, tonight on the show, I have Richard Irwin. And Richard Irwin is the Irwin. Sorry, he's always teasing me about this, pronouncing his name wrong. Richard is owns the Irwin Hypnosis Center. And this is in Bartlett, Tennessee. And we're going to be talking about hypnosis today. There's so many misunderstandings about hypnosis. I wanted to have him come and talk to you about what he does. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, it is a little bit. Well, it's a shame that most people's idea about hypnosis comes from party games and from bad movies.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I have to fight that every day in the office. I tell folks that I do the serious kind of hypnosis. Very, very, very serious kind of hypnosis.
And as we were talking about earlier, and I tell people, you do your affirmations. What do you think you're doing when you're doing your affirmations?
That's
this is a form of self hypnosis establishing intent and establishing expectation. Tell us a little bit about how you are overcoming these kind of things and being of service to people.
Well, one of the first things I tell people, I'll give you an idea of what a basic session is, how it's organized.
Mm-hmm.
People get in there, they're often, quite frequently, they're a little trepidatious, and some people feel as if I'm their last hope, and I hate to be their last hope, but they'll say that I've tried everything, and now I'm going to come and see you. Well, maybe they should have done it the other way around. But anyway, when a client comes in, there's some very basic paperwork that we fill out, and just so I know who they are, what exactly they're coming in for. And there's confidentiality and things like that. It's a lot like a HIPAA form in a doctor's office in some respects. But we'll talk about things that they need to know and things that they've probably heard that aren't correct. Hypnosis is no way, means, or fashion of any type of mind control. I can't control their mind. My job is to help them control their mind. And that's the first thing we have to get out of the way. No, they're not going to quack like a duck. I don't do that type of hypnosis. Can it be done? Yes. But it can only be done with a certain type of personality. They have to be highly extroverted. I'm talking about very highly extroverted people. I wouldn't even know because I don't test for that. I don't test for that. It's not necessary for me to know that because we're not going to do that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I tell them generally, but generally in most sessions that I do, I don't have to do regressive techniques where I get in there and have to dig around in their memories and things like that. Now, there are techniques that are regressive in nature, and I'm highly trained to do them. But generally, I don't have to do them. One of the ones that I've learned recently is, and I'll get into that a little while later, hypno-waving. And it is a somewhat regressive technique in that you have to revisit some of the feelings of different things that may have happened to you. So I'll give you some examples after a while.
Can you define regressive a little bit for people? Because I'm having
sure.
a feeling that a lot of them are going to think immediately a past life regression.
No,
they've heard
no.
about that.
Yeah, we're sticking in this life with this type of technique. So, for example, a person may have had some kind of traumatic event happen at the age of 15 or something like that. Well, we'll go back and revisit the age of 15 and under controlled conditions and using some of these techniques that I've got, we process the emotionality out of whatever the event was. And then, after we've done that, we inject, I might do something like have them visualize a time in their life when they were the most successful, or where they felt the best. It could be a graduation. It could be Christmas. It could be their first kiss. It could be their first automobile. You know, sometime when they were on top of the world. And then we'll use a neuro-linguistic programming technique or something like that to set that feeling in there. And that's kind of a bonus to this, because essentially what you'll do is, anytime you think of this is how you're going to feel. So you know, you're right on top of the world. This is much better. Things are a lot better. And those are some of the tools that I use. It's a little more complex than that, but that's basically what it is. That's what regressive techniques are. You go back to the age or to the time that events occurred in this life. So anyway, and I can see where they might get confused between that and past life regressions. So I indicate to them that we don't necessarily have to do that. However, again, sometimes we do. Some of the things that they really need to know about hypnosis, hypnosis occurs when a person, all hypnosis is a state, it's a system of techniques that I use while a person is in a state of trance. Humans are wired for trance. They're made to be in trance. In fact, humans walk around in trance about 90% of the time. They just don't realize it.
I go into trance every day. I'm serious. When I'm driving my car, I think I go into a trance.
Oh, I know you do. I know you do. There's 100 other different instances of that every day. Because really, how often do we actually have to use logic? It's not very frequently. Our subconscious mind carries out a lot of these different behaviors on its own, and that's a good thing. But it's trance. Although it's normal, and we go in and out of it so many different times a day in different depths, although it's normal, it is an altered state of consciousness, and there are phenomena and different things that are involved with it. And I explain those phenomena to the people, the ones that they need to know about. You know, one thing is, people have this mistaken impression that they're knocked out when they're in hypnosis. No, they're not. You hear everything. I couldn't possibly get suggestions in there if a person didn't hear me. So that's just fallacious reasoning. But it looks like you're knocked out. It looks like you're asleep, but you're not. You're highly focused. So that's one thing that people get. They mistake that all the time. Now, a lot of times people say, well, I can't be in trance. I hear you. Well, yeah, you can. I can't help you if you can't hear me. Now, even though a person is listening to me like that, it's entirely possible that they won't remember consciously what I said. There can be a big blank or a series of blanks between point A and point B, and one of the things that we worry about in that is, well, how is this supposed to work if I can't remember it? You don't have to consciously remember a single word that I said during a hypnosis session.
Everything is there, isn't it?
It's all there. The thing about it, it won't go away. I mean, it's there because once I have a person in trance, the information can only go to one location, and you can't lose it inside there. It has to go to the right spot. And it is inserted in memory. Physically, what happens is, essentially, I'm creating new neural traces inside there. And if I'm trying to change a behavior or something like that, the neural trace hopefully is going to be, the new one's going to be written over the old one. Now, that doesn't mean the old one is going to just up and disappear. It may eventually, but probably not for a while. But what we want to do is reinforce the new trace. And that's why we do a whole lot of reinforcement on people. So they'll hear me, but they don't have to remember consciously anything that I say. It's not necessary. Really, there's very little for a person to do during a hypnosis session with me. You don't have to concentrate on what I say. If your mind wanders, it's a good thing. Just let it go. It makes it a whole lot more pleasurable to the person that's doing the session, you know, that's having the session. Heck, they could be in Bali in their head, or, you know, or snow skiing, or whatever, fishing, whatever they want to do. They do not have to concentrate.
If they do that, then how can they answer your question or do what you're asking them to do?
They will. But the thing is, some of these things, they won't be. A lot of the things, a lot of the sessions that I do don't require their input.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the direct suggestion, indirect suggestion, and creative visualization sessions that I do don't require their input. Now, some of this does. This new technique I was going to talk about does. It requires their input. So they have to more or less listen in this case. Part of their conscious mind will still be operational during some of these techniques like this. It'll still be operational. Basically, about the only thing they have to do when they're in a session with me, though, most of the sessions, is for just a very short period of time, want their eyes to stay closed. When I ask them to close their eyes, and they just close their eyes and want them to stay closed. Very shortly after that, another phenomenon will kick in, and I'm talking about very shortly, within 15 to 30 seconds. It will feel as if their eyes will not open, and that's an illusion. It's called eye catalepsy. It's something that happens during sleep also. But I have the client open and close their eyes two or three times at the beginning of the session so they realize that, yes, you really could open your eyes if you had to. And that's, to some people, it's disconcerting to have that feeling because it feels like your eyes are glued shut. But it's a total illusion. Something else that happens directly after that is body catalepsy. And the person begins to feel as if they couldn't move. Now, that's associated with sleep, actually. That's one of the phenomena that occurs during sleep. When you're dreaming, your body goes into a cataleptic state in that you're semi-paralyzed. And that's what it feels like in trance. But that's an illusion also, because if I ask them to raise their arm or something like that, it'll pop right up. And if there was some real need during the session for them to stand up and get out of the office, they could. They're not under my control. They're always under their own control.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really paralyzed. However, there for a little while, it feels like they are. Now, what happens to me, I move past that. When I'm in hypnosis, I move past that very rapidly to the point where I actually don't feel my body. I'm just kind of like a floating intellect. I'm there. Sometimes I can feel some warmth, and I know my body exists, but beyond that, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. I'm working on whatever it is I'm working on. So that's how it feels. When I bring somebody out of trance, I very, very, very slowly count from 1 to 5, and I bring them out of it very slowly. I do not like to snap my fingers and bring a person out of trance because they are transitioning so many different levels of consciousness. It can be very uncomfortable to come out of trance quickly like that, and I don't like it. It startles me. And I'm pretty sure that the client is wired that way also. So anyway, that's a basic session right there. And most sessions require the initial session, the pre-talk itself, like this, essentially what I just did, will take about 20 minutes, and the actual hypnosis, will take anywhere from 25 to 35 minutes, depending on what we're working on. Some of them are longer. Some of the regressive techniques are quite a bit longer than that. That being said, this new technique is quick. It's a very abbreviated, however, extremely powerful technique.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about that a little bit. Called wave hypnosis.
It's called several different things. And these are all based on the same principle. Some people call it waving. Some people call it EMDR. One of the first people to develop an approach to doing this called it EMDR. Some people call it IMDR. Some people call it wing waving, bifocal stimulation, waving.
What does EMDR and IMDR stand for?
EMDR is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. And I believe that IEMDR is intensive EMDR. But the principles are all the same. The application of the reason this works is somewhat different in each of these. Hypno-waving is, and that's what this is, or you can also call it bilateral hemispheric stimulation. And what they're talking about there is, you are stimulating one hemisphere of the brain and then the other hemisphere of the brain and then back to the other hemisphere of the brain. And you do this in a series of, there's several different ways of doing this, but you do it for, in steps of like 30 to 60 seconds at a time, okay? What's happening here is you are simulating REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. Like what happens at night when you're dreaming. And the thing, what happens when you dream and you're in rapid eye movement like that, you are processing and reprocessing events of the day, all right? That's one way to stay sane. That's one of the reasons that it helps maintain your mental health to go into rapid eye movement. Well, a way to
and people say they don't dream. You know, how many times have you heard somebody say, "I don't dream"?
Well, I begin to question their sanity if they actually don't dream. The thing is this: they do not remember their dreams.
Yeah,
and it's not surprising because Americans are so sleep deprived. They're so tired that it's quite possible they slept so deeply, you know, that they would not remember their dream. But I can assure you, unless they're a raving lunatic, that yeah, they dream.
Americans are sleep deprived, are you saying they don't get 8 hours of sleep? What are you saying?
Well, I'm saying they don't get 6.5 hours of sleep. Everybody doesn't necessarily need 8 hours of sleep. A lot of the new research indicates somewhere between 6 and 6.5 hours. 6 hours, I think it is for men, 6.5 hours for women. And Americans frequently don't do that. And that's a contributing factor to a lot of different things. Ill health in general, suppressed immune function, weight gain. It causes weight gain. There is a whole list of things that are caused by not getting enough sleep.
And how can a person run a business in that shape? They think they're doing it, but what's actually happening?
They're deluding themselves, actually. Hmm. They may be running. Look, if you're running it at 50% and you're reasonably successful, exactly how good could you be if you were at near 100%?
Hmm.
And there are simple techniques for that. I do a lot of I teach people self-hypnosis to help deal with that, and I've also got CDs that I give them that promote relaxation and sleep. Heck, I wake up a lot at night. I don't rest the way I did when I was 20 years old. But what I do is I do a very simple self-hypnosis technique, put myself back to sleep. I just allow myself to relax back into sleep. And that's how I do it. And I get somewhere around 7 hours of sleep a night, and that's not bad. I'm almost 59 years old, so yeah. And there's things that have to happen in the middle of the night for me, you know. I'm up a lot, so that's not bad for a person my age. But a man needs about at least six hours, a woman needs about 6.5. And again, it can vary. It's highly personal. That can vary from individual to individual.
Wouldn't a lot depend upon how good a sleep it is, the quality of it?
Well, if you're getting poor quality sleep, about the only thing you're doing is resting. You're not getting the full healing and recuperating powers that normal good sleep would offer you.
Yeah.
So it's just very, very important. Well, it impacts everything.
Well, do you counsel, for instance, a corporation? Do they have you come in and work with their management staff or their marketing people or anything like that? Do you have classes of that nature?
Well, I don't really counsel, but I will work with them. I can't legally counsel, but what I can do. Is I can advise in a situation like that. I can advise, and I can also do individual. I can do life coaching type things in addition to mm-hmm. hypnosis.
What is the word counseling seem to be a no-no there? Is that because that's a licensed thing?
Yes, yes. It's been that terminology and a whole lot of language has been taken and legally bound up in different psychologists have it and the different counselors have it, things like that. I can't legally say a lot of that stuff. So they have their own. They have pretty much taken a great number of terms and assimilated them and made it illegal for me to use them. I have to be extremely careful what I advertise and what I put in writing, different things like that. And, you know, for example, in some states I'm a hypnotherapist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In other states I'm a hypnotist. In Tennessee I'm a hypnotist. I've been trying to get legislation passed to no avail to actually license hypnotherapists because I believe they ought to be licensed. And the reason I believe they need to be licensed is because there should be certain standards of training, and presently there aren't. Everybody should be trained to a certain standard, and they should have demonstrated by way of let's call it an apprenticeship program, that they know exactly what they're doing. And I'm not talking about something that's extremely onerous. We're not talking about, you know, 3 or 4 years working under somebody. I'm talking about at least 150 hours of training and 200 hours of supervised practice. And that's not very much. Really and truly, that's about all they need. They can become quite effective. Now, they don't know. Now, that's just a license to start. You're not in a position to, you know enough to do the simple things, but at that point, there's a lot of things you better not do. And it's not that you can hurt someone because you can't. You're not going to hurt anybody. But it's possible for you to, if you don't know enough about what you're doing, it's possible for you to, instead of referring an individual that needs to be referred, you'll go ahead and work with them that might not be successful. And these people might actually need help from somebody else. That's a judgment call.
Richard, are there hypnosis schools of good report type of thing? I mean, do you have some major hypnosis schools in America and in Europe and wherever?
Well, yeah, actually, I'm a hypnosis instructor. I'm certified by the National Guild of Hypnotists. I very rarely teach, but that's going to change in the next year. I'm going to start teaching a little bit next year. It's difficult to find an instructor. And if a person really wanted to learn it, it took me over a year. And then once I found
an instructor?
Yeah, it did. It took me a year. And then I found one, it was, after that, it was relatively cut and dried. But I would recommend that if a person was interested in this, that they contact the National Guild of Hypnotists and go online and to their site and look up and find an instructor. In fact, I believe I'm listed on their site as an instructor. But it's very expensive to learn.
I have seen with the College of Management Science in London that they have courses in hypnosis. Courses in almost everything. But I haven't seen that in most of the schools. I mean, do you have a class in hypnosis, for instance, at the University of Memphis?
They do in the counseling department, but it is extremely rudimentary. And I'm not, and I'm a graduate of, it was Memphis State. So, I'm not going to say anything terribly bad about them, but from what I've seen, from what the people have learned, and those people over there, the guy that teaches the course is very knowledgeable, okay? But the students don't know how to do it when they come out of it, from what I've seen. They're counseling students, and they just give them a rudimentary look-see at hypnosis, and they don't know how to do it once they leave there.
Maybe that's not designed to teach them how to do, but just to familiarize them with it.
More than likely that's the case. because trust me, it takes a whole lot more than that. This on the face of it, it looks very simple, but it's like so many different things. It's not, once you dig into it, it is not simple. And I caution people. I caution people who want to learn how to do this, because I tell you what, this is, these are the odds. My certification class years ago had I think it was 15 people in it, and of those 15 people, two actually practice hypnosis. The rest of them, I guess they use it on friends and family and different things like that. Maybe do it at parties. I don't know, but. They just don't practice. In the United States, I tell you what, I believe that they're probably, I think that the National Guild of Hypnotists, and it is the largest organization of hypnotists in the United States, and most hypnotists belong to it. I think it has something like 15,000 members. And of that 15,000 members, all over the United States, I would bet you that there are less than 4,000 people in the entire country that do what I do.
That are practicing hypnotists.
Do the types of things that I do, because I've got kind of a general practice look at this. I do a lot of things. My toolbox is a lot bigger than a tackle box. Imagine a huge Stanley toolbox. That's my toolbox. But it requires a great deal of work.
If a businessman comes in and says, "I've got, I need," what are they likely to be needing? What do they want?
Well, it depends on what their business is and what the motivation is. Some of them it's health. It's health. They want to say, for example, want to get some of their key members to stop smoking, or something like that. If it's a sales organization, they may want sales motivation. If it's something like somebody that's into R&D and development and things like that, it could be something as imagineering or something like that, different imagination type techniques. They might want to enhance their creativity. You can do that.
Advertising agency would be real good for that. where you got to be creative. Yeah.
Yeah. Not only have you got to be creative, you got to be creative by a deadline. it's forced creativity. But you got to remember, though, the place that I work inside the person's head, that's where the creativity lies. I work in the imagination, or at least the imagination is a big part of the.
They say that's the muscle of the mind.
I agree. Yeah. It performs a lot of tasks. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing if you actually use it, because you can present it with questions and get answers from it. People talk about, let me sleep on it. Let me sleep on it. Well, there's something to that, because if you have a problem, you go to bed, wake up more, or in the middle of the night, and have a solution. Well, guess where it came from? I mean, it came from the subconscious mind. It's a powerhouse inside there.
It's really amazing. I have awakened with where it seemed as if I'd been sitting at in a group meeting and working out something. And where I'm waking up not with an idea, but with a detailed plan. And then I'm spending the next few hours getting it down on paper.
That's right. I know it's pretty amazing. I've had the same thing happen to clients when I brought them out of trance. I've had them come out of trance with complete plans. And it's happening within them.
Wanting you to get out of the way and let them write it down.
Step back, Rich. Yeah. And it's something, it might be something that bugged them their entire life, but in 25 minutes, since they're actually actively listening to what's going on in the subconscious, they're okay, the subconscious is able to get through to them a little bit, and they step back out of their own way, then the plan emerges. And sometimes it's quite detailed.
We're a little past the top of the hour. It's 9:05. I would, that's Central Standard Time for those of you who are listening outside of this area. Richard, let's have a little commercial there. Tell us where you are, how they can get in contact with you, and if you've got a website, and lay it all out there in case somebody's shy about calling in. If you will call in, folks, call in at 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. Press the 1 button on your touchtone dial, and that will flag me to bring you in so that you can ask your question of my guest this evening, Richard Irwin. And that's of the Irwin Hypnosis Center. So go ahead, Richard, and give them your contact numbers and how they can find out more about you.
Absolutely. Again, I'm located in Bartlett, Tennessee, and my telephone number is 901-826-4389, 901-826-4389. My name is Richard Irwin, and that's spelled Echo Romeo Victor Indian November.
And he's telling you that correctly.
Yeah, E-R-V-I-N. It's E-R-V-I-N.
Yes.
My email address is richard.irwin, E-R-V-I-N, at irwinhypnosiscenter.com. My website is www.irwinhypnosiscenter.com. And again, that's E-R-V-I-N. And it's up. My website is up. I got hacked the other night, Jim, and they destroyed my website, but my intrepid web mistress has got it back up.
They got it already back?
Yep, she's already got it back up.
That was a bit of sabotage or what?
Yes, sir, it was. It was. It, believe it or not, I don't know. I doubt if they actually were these people, but they were trying to they made it look like it had been done by the hacker group Anonymous, but I'm pretty sure that Anonymous wouldn't want to take down a lowly hypnosis center.
Mm-hmm.
They work on governments and things like that.
What would they be interested in at your site?
I don't know, Jim. I really don't know. But we have absolutely no idea where the attack came from. We've got the host. The web host, that has the server.
Uh-huh.
They know where the attack originated, as far as how it got into the site, but they don't have a clue as to who did it either.
Only thing
somebody's living in their mother's basement. They don't have enough to do.
Yeah,
so there's
a lot of that. The if one goes to your website,
yes, sir.
Do you have kind of introductory information they can draw down, download, or what's on the site?
Well, as soon as I think she's probably just got a really basic site up right now. But as soon as it gets repopulated the way it's supposed to be, you got the whole thing up. She's got the whole site back up. It's up. So yes, there will be. There's a great deal of information there. There aren't any downloads, but there's a lot of information that you can skim over and look. Videos, things like that. And there's also a contact me box, so you can contact me from that box. Either that way or you can email me.
Do you have preliminary type of talks with people so that they can make up their mind where they want to do it, or are you hitting them pretty? Go ahead.
Most of the people have already decided on it. By the time they get me on the phone, they've already decided that this is what they want to do. But some of them don't, and they want to consult. And what I try to do as much as possible, I try to consult with them on the phone because it does a lot of different things. It saves time for me, and it saves time for them. Because most of the questions I can answer very quickly on the telephone. So essentially we kind of consult them on the phone. If they insist on having an office consultation, we'll do it. Some people they want to see me, you know.
Yeah.
And I can understand that.
Yeah, eyeball to eyeball.
eyeball, toe to toe. They just want to see me. Yeah, is this guy real? Yeah. I'm just, yeah. But,
and get a feel
sure.
for it. So, what is taking place with this new material that you mentioned, the EMDR and so forth?
It uses the. Let me give you an idea of what it looks like. Essentially, what I do is a session such as this would be. We would determine what the issue is. Say, for example, just as an example, say somebody lost a treasured dog. Say their dog died, and they might have died a year ago, and they're just all broken up over it, and they can't get over the grief of losing their dog. Well, we would make sure that exactly what the problem is, and then what the procedure would look like would be. I would hypnotize them, and this only requires very light trance. But I would hypnotize them, and I would be sitting to their side, not in front of them. I sit to the side of them. And I have the client rate their discomfort on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being, I'm okay, the 10 being is remorseful or grief stricken as they could possibly be. And say, for example, a client would say, I'm an 8. And he's in hypnosis now. He's in trance. He says that. After he rates it like that, then I have him open his eyes, and it's perfectly okay to have somebody open their eyes in hypnosis. And they can see. They can see. So I have them open their eyes, and I take my hand, and I hold two fingers out horizontally. I tell them, follow my fingers. And I move my fingers back and forth in a horizontal motion in front of their eyes. And what's happening is their eyes will follow my fingers, and then their eyes will go back and forth, right to left, depending on which side I'm sitting on. And then what I'm doing at that time is I'm artificially creating a REM state. And when you're in a REM state like that, you're processing, okay? And then what we're doing here is we're going to reprocess. We're going to reprocess this grief. So what I'll do on the first set of waves, I will give them suggestions. I know that that's hurt. It's hurt very badly. I know it's terrible to lose an animal pet like this, a friend. It's like you lost a friend. It's like you lost a loved one. I'm going back and forth at the same time. And I'm giving them these suggestions at the same time, that I'm doing the horizontal movement with my fingers, and they're following my fingers. After 30 to 60 seconds, I stop. I raise my hand over their head, and I have them close their eyes again. They'll rest for just a second. Then I'll say, on a scale of 0 to 10, how does it feel now? And they'll say something like, oh, it's a 5. And I'll ask them, what would we have to do, what would have to change in order for it to be a 0? And they'll say something like, maybe I need to get a new dog. Maybe I could get over this if I had a new dog. So I say, open your eyes and follow my fingers, and we'll wave. I'll help you get a dog. We'll find you a dog. There's a dog out there for you. There's a dog that will love you. There's a good dog that will replace the one that you had. It will never be the same, but it's a good replacement, and you'll feel really, really good with this dog, and we'll do that for 30 to 60 seconds. Bring them back out of it. Well, they're still in hypnosis, but you have them close their eyes, rest for just a second, and you have them rate how they feel again. Okay, I'm a 1. What would it take for you to be a 0? Well, it's going to have to be a beagle dog. Okay, and then we'll wave that in. Okay, we're going to go to the dog pound. We're going to go to a breeder. We're going to go here, there, and yonder. We're going to find the dog that you need. And bring them, then you have them close their eyes again, rest for just a second, and then have them rate it. Oh, it's a 0 now. Great. And this is what you do. Just to put the icing on the cake, this is when you go in there and you say, I want you to see, picture, imagine, or just feel, and let me know and describe to me the most momentous occasion of your life, the time that you felt on top of the world. You had just won something. You won a big basketball game. You won a football game. You just got married. sometime in your life when you were on top of the world, you were on the top of your game. Tell me about that. Oh, well, it was when I graduated from high school. And then I say, open your eyes and follow my fingers. Boom, boom, boom. And then what we'll do is we'll take those happy feelings, and I'll give them positive suggestions. You're happy. You're on top of the world. This is the way you feel. You feel wonderful, blah, 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 blah. You do that, and you do that for 30 to 60 seconds, and then you have them close their eyes, and you very gently bring them up out of trance. And by that time, and then you can ask them, how do you feel about the dog that you lost? And more than likely what it will be, I'm sorry that I lost the dog, but I realize that I can get a new one. So what was abnormal has now become normal, because it's normal to feel feelings of loss. However, it's not normal to feel that intense feeling of loss after that length of time, you know? There's a fine line there. But that's just an example.
We have someone calling in. Richard, I want to bring them in. But I must say that the terminology that you use there reminds me of very advanced closing techniques. The verbiage of leading them to the...
Yes, they are very advanced closing techniques, Jim.
Yeah.
They are. And the closers, know that. You know,
yeah.
We don't do this in a vacuum.
Yeah. Let me bring in Cecil is
certainly
on the line. And Cecil, you have a question for Irwin, Richard?
I was listening to that process. Were you using triggers and anchors in that process?
The waving itself will act as an anchoring process. However, sometimes I will use an NLP anchor, such as I'll pat them on the shoulder or something like that, depending on what I'm trying to do. And a lot of this stuff I can do with NLP anyway, but this is actually quicker. But as far as the trigger is concerned, we don't really need a trigger for this. I could use some triggers, but as a matter of fact, I can anchor in an entire process where they feel absolutely great. And if you want, anytime you want to feel absolutely great in this fashion, you just take your right arm and put it over and touch your left shoulder and cross your heart, and you'll immediately feel the same way you feel right now. Or you can make an okay sign with your fingers. That's a good one, too. That's a good trigger that they can use. But there's a million and one different ways to do that. That's just like there's a million and one different ways to use this waving phenomena. Anything that's going to create bilateral hemispheric stimulation is going to have this effect. I use it on myself, and the way that I do it is if I have an unpleasant thought or something like that, I'll concentrate on the unpleasant thought, sit up straight, separate my feet, and I will gently tap my knees back and forth, my right hand on my right knee, left hand on left knee, and go pow, 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 pow. Just drum on them a little bit for about 30 seconds, and then I'll rate myself as to how I feel. Most frequently, what happens is, whatever it was that was bothering me at that point will be just a non-factor. And a person can do that for themselves, and I teach the clients to do that. There's a couple different things that they can do like that. But I like that one best because it's inobtrusive, and you can do it in the presence of other people.
Okay.
Did you have a follow-up question, Cecil?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to leave you on the line here since we don't have another caller at the moment in case you've got another question, okay?
Okay.
Richard, I'm curious about the – I know that a lot of your businesses – of course, personal individuals needing to change a habit or whatever, but I'm wondering about corporations. Are you getting many speaking engagements? Are people wanting to know? I mean, what's the atmosphere out there in the business world when it comes to hypnosis?
Well,
And I assume you are available for speaking engagements.
Absolutely. I'll definitely speak at it. I'll speak at the drop of a hat. I have no problem with that because I enjoy talking about this. And I know a little about it, so I can put on a fairly decent talk. I'd love to do that. But as far as the corporations are concerned, I haven't had as much penetration in that front as I would like to. I have done some corporate stop smoking, not near as much as you would think. See, there is a big push to use drugs for that sort of thing. They think that's the answer. Pills are always the answer, right? Well, that's not necessarily the case, and especially in smoking. But Chantix is dangerous, and I can tell you that unequivocally. I don't know how the FDA passed, other than the big money.
Well, say it again, the name of it.
Chantix is dangerous. Yes. It is so dangerous that the FAA will not allow commercial pilots to fly and take it because of suicidal thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I have had people come into my office and tell me about suicidal thoughts, about homicidal thoughts. I had a child come in there, and she was about 18 years old, and to me that's a child. Mm-hmm. She had taken Chantix for 1 week, a year, before she saw me. 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, it gave me vivid dreams. And I said, how vivid were they? She said, just like life, so vivid. And I said, and then she said, and I'm still having them. So she had then it changed that child's brain chemistry in a 1 week dose. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I had a woman come in. She brought her husband in, and she wanted to quit smoking. And we talked. She said, I took Chantix, and it made me homicidal. I said, and wanting to know exactly who I had in my chair, I asked her, exactly how homicidal were you? And she said, well, I tried to kill my husband with a 9-iron.
Woo-hoo.
And he said, oh, well, it wasn't that bad. He's trying to make it sound like it. I said, well, tell me exactly what you did. She said, I knocked down two interior doors to kill him
with the 9-iron. That's pretty
now,
heavy.
Any court of law, I'm thinking a reasonable person on the jury, if you knock down one door to kill somebody, now that might be manslaughter, okay? You knock down two, that's premeditated murder because you've had time enough in the interim between those two doors to hopefully cool off. You know what I'm saying? That's first-degree murder. And that is a direct result of taking that drug. Now, this is anecdotal evidence. It's all anecdotal. You know, everything I've got is coming from the horse's mouth. I haven't done double blind studies on this or anything, but I know that I've been hearing these stories the entire time I've been practicing. That stuff is dangerous, and I don't see how in the devil they're still able to sell it.
Well, it's like it's like aspartame. They're still putting it in every stick of chewing gum being manufactured, I think.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it is dangerous also.
The now you speak at corporations or advise corporations. What about churches? Have you been? Has anybody asked you to come in and speak to a congregation, for instance?
Well, actually, I did speak at First Unity once, but that was a good while back. I haven't had very many. That's the only church invitation that I've had. And that was just to a select few during a fair that they were having there. And that's been, I don't know, three, four years ago maybe, a good while back. I don't get very many invitations from churches. And that's unfortunate, too, because some of these churches, I think, have wellness. They've got gyms and things like that. So you would think that they would have some type of a wellness program for the congregation. I figure they do. I just don't know about it.
What about guest lecturing at universities?
I've done that. I was a guest lecturer to the third year class of doctors at UT 1 year. And it was a a complementary therapy workshop, and there were several of us there. There was a chiropractor there. There was an acupuncturist, Dr. Lee. I was there, and two or three others, and we talked about our specialties, and then we broke the students up into, there was 160 of them. We broke them up into groups of 40, and we actually did whatever it is we do. I hypnotized 160 of them that day. Well, most of them did. Some of them were sitting up trying to observe the rest of them. But most of them really, really enjoyed it. And the truth of the matter is, they didn't think a whole lot of what I was talking about, but after I showed them what I was talking about, it was a whole different story.
Yeah. It's getting past the preconceptions about hypnotism. Yes. And I can see where that'd be the problem.
Absolutely. And it's very unfortunate because I talk to people. It's okay to be skeptical. That's perfectly all right. I'm a scientist. It's good to be skeptical. But there is 200 years now. There are 200 years. Of good science behind this. This has been studied and restudied and hashed and rehashed, and now, because we have functional MRI and different types of imaging techniques, you can actually see to a great extent what's going on inside a person's brain. So this is kind of, I tell people that are skeptical, I said, this is sort of like gravity. If you go to the top of a 10-story building and jump off onto a concrete parking lot, you're going to die whether or not you believe that gravity exists. Us is kind of like that. It's sort of like that because I've had people who were utterly skeptical, and I had one great big construction worker that had him in good trance. Did a smoking session with him, brought him out of it. He had a few expletives to give to me. He paid me and left. I thought, well, that went very well. 3 days later, he called me back and he said, I don't know what the heck you did to me, but I haven't touched a cigarette yet. And I said, well, you remember the thing I told you about gravity? I said, it's going to work. You know, if a person has any motivation at all, these things will work. Mm-hmm. Some of the things I can do with almost utter certainty. There's a couple things that I do that I can tell you they will work. It's very, 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 very rare for something like that to collapse. And I don't say that lightly. My single session, success rate for stopping smoking is probably way over 80%. I only tell people it's 70%. It's kind of like having a winning streak at Tunica. I don't want to mess it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I tell them it's 70%, but in truth, it may be approaching 90%. But people can't have a difficult time wrapping their head around something like that, you know?
What is the most serious type of situation you've worked on now? Well, we've got only a couple of minutes left, but if you've got, go ahead and give your information again where people can contact you.
Certainly. Richard Irvin, and this is Irvin Hypnosis Center, and you can reach me at irvinhypnosiscenter.com, and it's spelled E-R-V-I-N, irvinhypnosiscenter.com, or you can give me at richard.irvin@irvinhypnosiscenter.com. That's my email address. My telephone number is 901-826-4389, 901-826-4389. Just call me, and if you can't get me, just means I'm with someone, just leave me a message.
Well, Richard, I don't think we got far enough along there. We've only got 60 seconds, and we're going to have to do this again if you're game for it.
I'm game for it.
We're booked in now into December through December, but certainly early in the year, I want to have you come back and let's go into this a little deeper because I think there's some things there people need to know.
There is, and they need to know that you can use it for PTSD. Okay.
PTSD.
That's very important. Yes, sir. It's a very important piece of this.
All right. Well, keep that in mind. What is PTSD, real quick?
Post-traumatic stress disorder. It'll work beautifully with that.
And you have people coming back from the military utilizing that?
Yes, sir, but it's not just them. It's people who've had automobile wrecks, had being beaten by their spouses, you name it. There's a lot of different ways to be traumatized.
Thanks very much for being with us tonight. Thank you for coming in, Cecil, with your question. and all of you for listening in on the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. Join us next week for another very interesting guest and information that you need to have, all right? Have a good evening, everyone. Thanks again, Richard.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.